Welcome to Interpod, a podcast by Interpride where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community. I'm Michelle Miao, your host. Vietnam is celebrating in a big way after a big step in their LGBTQIA+ movement. The health ministry has officially confirmed that same-sex attraction and being transgender are not mental health conditions. This has huge impact for the LGBTQIA+ community in Vietnam. We speak to Phong Vuong this month, who is the LGBTI Rights Program Manager at the Institute for Studies of Society, Economy, and Environment, a local NGO working for the advancement of human rights in Vietnam. Before we get to the interview, here's Michael Lavers with the Washington Blade and global LGBTQIA+ news.
This is Michael Lavers, and I'm the international news editor for the Washington Blade, America's LGBTQI news source. Thousands of people took part in the Euro Pride 2022 march in Belgrade, Serbia on September 17th. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić in late August announced the march had been canceled, but he later reversed course amid international outrage. Upwards of 6,000 police in riot gear and security personnel in civilian clothes cordoned off the march route in downtown Belgrade. Media outlets reported authorities arrested more than 60 anti-LGBTQI protesters who sought to disrupt the march. Reports also indicate a group of Serbian extremists attacked a group of LGBTQI activists from Albania after the march, but it largely took place without further incident. Meanwhile, activists in the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv held a series of pride events that took place from September 17th through September 25th. Kharkiv Pride, among other things, held a memorial that paid tribute to the LGBTQI people who have died during Russia's war against Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in August announced his support for a law that would allow same-sex couples to enter into civil partnerships. One of the events that took place during Kharkiv Pride highlighted the need for marriage equality in Ukraine. And finally, voters in Cuba on September 25th approved their country's new family code that extends marriage and adoption rights to same-sex couples. The Cuban government in the years after the 1959 revolution sent gay men, among other groups, to work camps. The Cuban government until 1993 forcibly quarantined people living with AIDS in state-run sanitaria. The Cuban government's decision to remove a marriage equality amendment from the country's new constitution that Cubans approved in 2019 sparked outrage among the island's independent LGBTQI activists. The September 25th referendum on the new family code took place against the continued persecution of those, including independent LGBTQI activists, who publicly criticized the Cuban government. Cuba will join Costa Rica, Colombia, Brazil, Chile, and other countries and territories in the Americas with marriage equality once the new family code takes effect. This is Michael Lavers. Please visit us at WashingtonBlade.com if you want to get more news about the LGBTQI rights movement around the world.
Hi, my name is Phong. My pronouns is he, him, and I'm currently working with IC, the Institute for Studies of Economy, Environment, and Society. So we are a local NGO working for human rights in Vietnam, including LGBTIQ rights. And I'm currently managing the LGBTI rights program.
So talk to us about what's happening in Vietnam, how we got to this decision, and maybe even mention some of the core people who helped make this happen.
I think also for us, you know, in Vietnam, this is a long time coming. So changes like this doesn't come after one or two campaigns, right? It comes from a very long process of advocacy with the government. I think it started with building like a collaborative relationship with the government in Vietnam. Many times when the government draft bills that concerns LGBTIQ people, they will come to us as a resource because we have the connection to LGBTIQ people. We have the research, the data that we have done. We have to do the survey. We have done the research to find out the situation on the ground for LGBTIQ people. So oftentimes They come to us for information and for network. So throughout the year, kind of build a relationship where they can trust us to kind of flag them with ongoing issues that concern the community. And then recently, I think as of last year, we see an uptick in the number of cases we receive that, you know, concerns LGBTIQ people being forced to get treatment from hospitals. Or we are seeing an increase in parents going to us to ask about, you know, their child coming out, where can I get them to kind of treat this disease, quote unquote. We are also some advertising from hospitals or from service provider providing service to, you know, cure the gay disease or, you know, do treatment, offering treatment to revert them back to normal. So I think we saw that and saw the opportunity to do a campaign to bring up these issues that has always been underlying in Vietnam, you know, the issues of seeing LGBTIQ people as a disease and really do a big public campaign about it. And we were very lucky to partner with a creative agency from Singapore, actually. So this is kind of a Vietnamese-Singaporean collaborations. And together we did a campaign, a public campaign, surrounding the idea of, you know, if being LGBTIQ is really a disease, then we should be entitled to sick leave. You know, you should be able to call in and ask for days off, sick day off, because you are gay. And we kind of put that to the test, got a bunch of volunteers to actually call in to their supervisors to, you know, ask for days off because they are gay. So that was a big success. We got a lot of signatures and sent that signatures to WHO in Vietnam. WHO in Vietnam, after a period of advocacy, respond to affirm the Vietnamese public that being LGBTIQ is not a disease, you know, consistent with their previous statement in, for example, in 1990, where they removed homosexuality from the ICD, from the mental health, mental disorder chapter from the ICD-10. And then after a while, MOH follows suit and issue a guideline to condemn conversion therapy practice and ask the Department of Health from provinces all over Vietnam to monitor the situation of conversion therapy practices in their provinces, which is a very good news and a big win for us.
Do people really believe that LGBTQIA plus people were diseased, like this was a mental health illness? Help us understand what the Vietnamese population actually understood or believed of queer people.
I think the attitude or the belief of the Vietnamese society is a bit more complex than that. So of course, there will always be a sector of the public who actually think that this is a disease. But that sector, kind of the number of people who think like that, kind of decrease over time with the amount of visibility, the representations, the work that civil society are doing in Vietnam to educate the public. Those people kind of, the number is decreasing. But there is also a very big amount of people who think that, okay, this being LGBTIQ might not be a disease, but it is somehow treatable, somehow curable. As in, like, for example, if a child come out, their parents, who, you know, a lot of them are exposed to some kind of LGBTIQ informations or knowledge, might not think that that is a disease, as in like a disorder, but they will also think that, you know, their child being LGBTIQ can be treated. the son can, you know, hang out with less girls and maybe he will revert back to normal. Or, you know, the transgender child can dress as is his or her biological gender, and then he will revert back to normal. Some, you know, will ask their child to go to the hospital to do some testing. So not necessarily treatment. It goes back to the ideas that there is something wrong. There is something that needs to be fixed. That kind of understanding is very, very widespread in Vietnam. On the other hand, a lot of service provider kind of is very opportunistic, and they provide treatment and they advertise, you know, treatment to parents who have an LGBTIQ child to kind of drive traffic or business to their hospitals. And a lot of parents who doesn't know will fall into that kind of trap. And that's when you know conversion therapy is being performed on young people.
The conversion therapy in Vietnam, is that religious based?
Sometimes. So we also have like two kind of conversion therapy or conversion treatments, whatever you want to call it. The first one is very, you know, it's Western medicine. You know, hormones therapy, we have psychology treatment, we have, you know, tests and survey and all that in the hospitals. So that is one kind. And we also have another kind who parents sometimes will take their children to, you know, a shaman or fortune tellers or, you know, other kind of spiritual practices that is native to Vietnam. So we also see that that kind of practices from parents.
What about the laws regarding conversion therapy in the country, in Vietnam?
This is definitely something that the campaign didn't achieve. So the law is still quite non-existent regarding, you know, specific protection against conversion therapy in Vietnam. Or specific protection against, you know, any kind of discrimination based on Sochi in Vietnam. So the law is quite blank regarding that. And that is definitely a thing in the future that the movement will be very, very interested in working on. So this particular decisions from MOH, from the Ministry of Health that we have been talking about, it is actually a guideline. So it is a guideline for, you know, a standard of conduct behavior that the Ministry of Health issues to Department of Health. So this is not a law, but it also have some kind of impact on the way they conduct their business and the way they monitor things. So so not a full win, but a very good entry point just to work more on the law.
I think it is a very big, gigantic step in the right direction. This month actually is National Suicide Prevention Month. Can you give us your opinion as far as how this can really, truly be a part of the prevention part, the mental health part for LGBTQIA+ in Vietnam, especially youth?
Thank you for the question. I think you hit the nail on the head on the prevention and the mental health. Because like, at least from my personal perspective, I was born in the 90s. So I think growing up, this kind of decisions from the most trusted sources for medical information in Vietnam, which is the Ministry of Health, right? I never thought that it would happen. And I share this sentiment with a lot of people who grow up in the like the 90s or a bit older, who are not Gen Z. This is like basically a dream to us that we would have some kind of document like this on hand. Because while this is not a law, I think this can be used by so many people, so many queer LGBTIQ people who are getting, you know, forced to have treatment. This can be their weapons. This can be what they show to medical provider, or this is what they show to their parents, that, you know, being LGBT is not a disease. And I'm quoting from the most trusted source of medical information in Vietnam. So this can be a very, very powerful tool to protect yourself from, you know, conversion therapy practices that will get, you know, forced on you. I think the thing that we need to do is a lot of communication. You know, we need to make sure that all people, LGBTIQ people, LGBTIQ youth and their parents know about this guideline and are able to use this guideline when the time comes, right? When the time comes where they get, you know, forced to go to the hospital or they get forced to have treatment, this is what they will use to protect themselves. So that is the prevention part. And I think this also will have impact on the mental health and the, I guess the, it will be another enforcement that, you know, the Vietnamese government respect the rights of LGBTIQ people. Because we are living in an age where, you know, there are a lot of misinformation and disinformation circulating the internet. And sometimes, you know, sources such as civil society, non-governmental organizations are not as credible to some people as, you know, governmental sources. So this also can reinforce the stance of Vietnamese society toward LGBTIQ people, which is, I think, very, very nice thing to have.
Just a couple more questions for you. And thank you so much again for spending some time with us on Interpod. So it's Hanoi Pride, which you had mentioned to me. So happy Pride.
Thank you.
Tying this all back, Pride has been the foundation, has been the backbone. The visibility has absolutely mattered to our community. It's important for our youth to see us and to see us in social gatherings so that they feel safe. I'd love to hear your thoughts about, you know, the importance of pride and how this all ties back to our progress as a movement and how it all comes together, how it all helps, and in the end, saves lives.
I think pride is such an important event, especially for the community in Vietnam. I think after 2 years of COVID, we really come to appreciate the, you know, the gathering and the human connection that we made during Pride every year, right? And I think this year it is felt much more than any other Pride in the past because the 2 years of COVID. And this year, Hanoi Pride, it is named Knock Knock is Love. And the organizers named Hanoi Pride this year like that. Because to them, it is not just about, you know, coming out. It is also about, they said, and I quote, an act of coming in, you know, in opening the door, opening your door to invite people in to your space. And that is what Hanoi Pride is to the community in Hanoi. It is a space for LGBTIQ people, you know, created by LGBTIQ people. But this year, you know, after COVID, it's the time to open the door for, you know, LGBTIQ people all over Vietnam, to our allies, our partners who have been with us throughout the last like 3 years of COVID, you know, to have a very, very big celebrations. So that kind of spirit of inclusivity and the spirit of, you know, collaboration really carries throughout the event. And I think Hanoi Pride is not just for the community in Hanoi, right? It is an event for all the LGBTIQ people in Vietnam. A lot of them traveled to Hanoi for Hanoi Pride. And hopefully they will see a part of them in Hanoi Pride, and they will see a part of the drive and the motivation and the inspiration to bring some part of Pride back to their hometown and, you know, potentially start a Pride there. So that is what, you know, Hanoi Pride and we have always wanted to do, is to you know, have pride for all the provinces in Vietnam. And I think Hanoi Pride serves as a kind of inspiration, a kind of a model that, you know, people can take from, people can learn from and apply to their own provinces. And hopefully it will spread even more in the future.
I love that. I know it will, because we've seen it happen over and over and over again. Phong, this has been such a joy to listen to you, to hear you, and to witness this incredible progress that you've made, you and the community at large. Last question for you. What will you be doing for Hanoi Pride? What will you be wearing? How will you enjoy yourself?
What will I be doing? I will, of course, join the march. We will have, usually it's tradition of Hanoi Pride to have two march. The first one is on bike, and the second one is on foot. It's a walking march around the central lake in Hanoi. So I will join both of them and, you know, celebrate, be very visible, have a good time. And, you know, what I really, really looking forward to do is to reconnect to all the people who will come, who will travel to Hanoi Pride from their provinces, you know, update on how they have been doing and how we, as, you know, IC, can you support them to, if they want to, bring pride to their hometown. Yeah, and so that is what I'm looking forward to.
Thank you so much for tuning in to our episode, especially an episode that ties back into National Suicide Prevention Month, an important month to talk about mental health in the LGBTQIA+ community. There are many resources, especially if you're in the United States, but we recognize that not every country has the same resources. A good recommendation is to reach out to an LGBTQIA+ organization that's nearest to where you live, or reach out to someone that you trust. Someone that you trust for information, for collaboration, for friendship, especially someone that you trust to talk to. Our World Conference is coming up in late October, so if you are interested in attending, there is still time. You can head to intrapride.org for more information, and also you can listen to all past episodes of Intrapod. This is Michelle Miao, your host of Intrapod, a podcast by Intrapride where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community.